He stood up to the Green Revolution and, with his standing up, became the heretic of modern agriculture and food. Professor William Albrecht's advocacy of a different way leads us to ask, can we live without living soils?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,034th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Ushuaia who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Strube on the boards. Jason.
My pleasure as always.
Hey, do you know who Norman Borlaug was?
Actually, never heard of that.
Never
gentleman.
Heard of Norman Borlaug.
Yes, sir.
Okay, stand by.
I sure will.
Folks, green is a very popular thing to be these days, but green was much more important a half a century ago. From the 1930s to the 1960s, green was the revolution that pretty much changed the course of human history. The technologies of this green revolution, higher yielding grain varieties, more powerful equipment, more potent chemicals, made it possible for fewer farmers to grow more food crops. The father of the green revolution, Norman Borlaug, was given the Nobel Peace Prize for having saved the lives of a billion people. The Green Revolution allowed the world's population to blossom, kind of like a bacteria in a petri dish. Though the Green Revolution would seem to be one of mankind's greatest achievements, some are not so certain. Among them was the late Professor William Albrecht, who, as chairman of the Department of Soils at the University of Missouri, held forth the proposition that human health was linked directly to the health of the soils. Albrecht said of the Green Revolution, soils, and I quote, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium formulas, as legislated and enforced by state departments of agriculture, mean malnutrition, attack by insects, bacteria, and fungi, weed takeover, crop loss in dry weather, and general loss of mental acuity in the population, leading to degenerative metabolic diseases and early death. For his heresy, Albrecht was shunned by the movers and shakers of industrial agriculture and forced into retirement. But now, a half century later, school test scores are falling and all kinds of degenerative diseases are starting to show up. And so we simply must ask, can we live without living soils? And who better to ask than the man, Dr. Joel Wallach, who is a veterinarian, a naturopathic doctor, host of the Dead Doctors Don't Lie show, author of many books, and founder of the Longevity Company. Holy smokes, you're like the original Energizer Bunny, aren't you?
How you doing, Michael?
Very good. I've been looking forward to this show for a long time because I know you were a student of Dr. William Albrecht.
That's right. He was my soils professor, and of course my first degree at the University of Missouri was, in fact, agriculture, and I went there from a little Angus farm west of St. Louis to become a scientific farmer, go back to the farm. It was my purpose.
What does that mean, scientific farmer?
Well, you know, it's a green revolution. I was going in to study how to grow more food on a limited amount of land and grow better food and so forth. And of course, I was the first Wallach to go to a university. Everybody else had like fourth grade education, that sort of stuff.
Right.
And I was just really honored to have Professor Albrecht as my soils professor.
What was this, like 1960s, early 1960s?
1958, and started out as a freshman in agriculture. Was a ROTC student. University of Missouri is a A&M college, agriculture and military. Most people don't know that. It's like Texas A&M and Florida A&M. And so when I graduated ag school, I not only got a degree in agriculture, but I graduated as an officer and a gentleman.
There it was, all in one good package.
Yeah.
So that must have been kind of toward the tail end of Professor Albrecht's career then.
It was. I think he probably was there for another 5 or 6 years after I graduated. And he's a wonderful man. Usually on the weekends when everybody else was off drinking beer and going places to have fun, I'd sit in Sanborn Field, which is his experimental fields, right close to the veterinary school, and in the rows of corn and soybeans and potatoes. And he would sit there with me just cross-legged for hours going over this Green Revolution thing. And I was truly blessed to have spent that face time with him.
So what was it about him that attracted you to him? I mean, most of that, at this point in his career, he was kind of like a pariah.
Well, he was, and he had few people who were listening to him. And because I went there to learn about scientific agriculture, and he had time, and he spent it with me because I didn't have a lot of money to go play and so forth, but I also wanted to learn everything I could. And we became good friends, and he was my mentor. He's my first non-relative male mentor, and I was really very proud of that, and he was quite the guy. And what I learned from him was that animal and human health is directly related to the health of the soil, and that was his premise, and he held it for a long time.
And he got in a lot of trouble for that.
Well, absolutely, because the people who were donating money for grants and studies and everything to the universities were the big chemical companies and fertilizer companies. And his view kind of fended them off. They were spending money at other universities. And, of course, the fathers of the University of Missouri were unhappy about that. They weren't getting their share. And he was more interested in the science than the politics and the money. And he was a very interesting guy and to me. And that kind of set me off in a direction. I was understanding what he was saying. And he knew that the soil had lost its fertility. And, there, you know, he held many theories. He didn't quite put his finger on everything, but he was thinking in terms of grinding up rocks and, mm-hmm. and putting minerals back in the soil. And his belief was over-farming was the reason for soil depletion of minerals. And he really was into the over-farming thing. And
over-farming meaning?
Well, you didn't rotate crops, and you just used the same monocrop.
You kept taking it without taking giving.
Exactly. Taking without putting anything back in. And even he knew that local compost wasn't enough, organic material. I think he was the first one to understand that organic material was not enough, that you really needed minerals. And he was into grinding up rocks and putting mineral dust and that sort of stuff back in the soil, because he knew that the minerals in our food came from the soil, which meant that plants had to suck them up out of the ground. And if you didn't replace them, you're in trouble. And he didn't understand everything, but he was a very basic guy, and he was right on track from the end point. But how he had gotten there, I think he missed.
And he obviously had a huge impact on your life. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And how you developed your life and your businesses and whatnot, because it's kind of a reflection of that basic principle that if you don't get it in your food, you're not going to get it.
That's right. You have to supplement. And, of course, we had done this in the animal industry. And, again, growing up on a little Angus farm, it was very important to give minerals to our livestock. Otherwise, the veterinarian was going to be out there all the time. They'd get arthritis. They'd have infertility. They'd have miscarriages. They'd be infertile. They would die. The calves would die of white muscle disease, which is muscular dystrophy in humans, and this sort of thing. And so it was very important to understand what minerals you need to supplement the animals with. And then the same people living on the land, you'd ask them, well, do you supplement yourself? Do you take the same vitamins, minerals that the animals do? Say, oh, no, we just eat well. It didn't make sense to me as a kid. And of course, this is what Professor Albrecht actually reinforced, was that you have to keep that soil healthy. Otherwise, the people and animals on the soil are not going to be healthy.
And from that realization, you went on to develop the world-famous series, The Dead Doctors Don't Lie, the tape, the radio show, mm-hmm. built the Longevity Company, which is built around the principle of providing those nutrients to our bodies that the food is no longer providing.
That's correct. The only way to level the playing field, Michael, is to supplement, just like we do in animals. And of course, halfway through ag school, my roommate lived in a dormitory situation. I played sports. I wrestled for the University of Missouri at the university level. And so they put all of us athletes in dormitories. And my roommate was going to apply for veterinary school, which I hadn't thought of. He says, come on, do it. And I did, and we both got in.
There it was, just like that.
Yeah.
And the course is set. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking, we're going back in time, half a century, to a gentleman by the name of Professor William Albrecht, who was the chairman of the Department of Soils at the University of Missouri. And he was the one who really stood up to the whole notion of the Green Revolution and said that it, though it might seem like the best thing in the world to have happening, it might not be. And so that's what we're going to look at. We're going to go back to the Green Revolution when we return on the Food Chain with Michael Olson and Dr. Joel Wallach. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-6 or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city greenbelts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-6 or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, folks, you probably feature yourself as a green person. Green is very important these days, but half a century ago, it was even much more important because it was the Green Revolution. That period of time when we had an explosion in agriculture technology that allowed fewer and fewer farmers to grow more and more crops. And so that's the subject of this presentation right now. We're talking with Dr. Joel Wallach about Dr. William Albrecht, who stood up to the Green Revolution and said maybe it's not the best thing to have happen because the inputs that we're putting in, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, to get more and more and more crops are not leading to better and better food. They're leading, in fact, to cheaper food that's deficient in essential nutrients. So that's where we're at right now. 1938 it started. That's a long time ago. This is what Dr. William Albrecht said, 1938. A declining soil fertility due to a lack of organic material, major elements, and trace minerals is responsible for poor crops and in turn for pathological conditions in animals fed deficient foods from such soils. And mankind is no exception. 1938, a significant warning way back then. And so he must have been really thinking about where we're heading.
Well, he was a very bright fellow. And, of course, the story really goes back to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882. And jumping ahead a second, we'll go back to 1882, but jumping ahead to 1936, 2 years before he made that observation, the U.S. Senate document 264 was published in 1936, and it was the result of a two-year hearing in which followed the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression, and they were interviewing successful farmers and failed farmers and food processors and so forth because they recognized that our soils were deficient in 1936. That was the whole genesis of that, and he was a student of that information. And so they, even the U.S. Senate, they knew the soils were depleted of elements, minerals, major minerals like calcium and phosphorus, and also deficient trace minerals, but nobody knew why. Okay, nobody knew why. Mm-hmm. Well, you jump backwards And this is
Justice von Liebig.
Yeah, we're going to jump backwards to Monday, September 4th, 1882, on Pearl Street, New York City. It all happened in one heartbeat. Our fertility of our soil went away. We know the exact moment, Michael, because that story was in every newspaper in the world the next day. Okay, because we had to telegraph then. So
what story?
Oh, I'm going to tell you.
Okay. I can't wait.
Yeah, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, on Pearl Street in New York City, in the bluff overlooking the construction of the Brooklyn Bridge, Thomas Edison pulled the switch on the first commercial electric generating plant. Within 10 years, every town and every city in the industrialized world converted from wood as the universal fuel to electricity. Now you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And when that happened, people didn't realize it, but going back to the days of the pharaohs, people got their nutritional minerals by putting wood ashes in their gardens. They put the wood ashes in the gardens for yield because they realized by accident that wood ashes would fertilize crops and you get more yield in your little gardens by putting wood ashes in there. But what they didn't realize, that the pumpkins and the beans and peas and squash and okra and tomatoes and potatoes and onions, bell peppers and corn, everything you grew in those fields, you fertilized with the wood ashes, sucked up the minerals, because wood ashes are not ashes. They're 95 to 98% minerals, and the plants sucked them up. People ate those plants, and they got their minerals in that fashion. They didn't know they were getting minerals. They didn't know that it was the minerals that was fertilizing the plants. They thought it was wood ashes. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, when everybody converted to electricity, how many wood ashes are left over in your home every morning when you fuel your home with electricity?
Not much.
None. And so what happened was, every town, every little garden, every little farmer got electricity in these industrialized nations. When that happened, there was no more wood ashes to go in the gardens. Now, the story gets worse here at this point. Okay? The story gets worse because everybody liked electricity, and politicians jumped in and said, hey, you vote for me, I'll electrify the Tennessee Valley. And they got the TVA, and booming factories, people had jobs. It was like wonderful. Same thing in the Hoover Dam and Colorado River, 7 southwestern states, booming, businesses, electricity, jobs, it was booming. But there was an unintended consequence, flood control. And every spring, now you know the answer to this one, Michael, what is the most fertile, going back to the beginning of
Nile
time?
Nile Delta, right?
Nile Delta, yeah. All floodplains, mm-hmm. River bottoms, river valleys, they would flood every spring. And when the flood water would recede, what was left over? Silt, mud from the mountains, hundreds or maybe even thousands of miles upstream. And did farmers push that salt, that silt over to the side before they planted? No, they plowed it in, renewed the soil every year. Now, with these hydroelectric dams comes flood control. And at first, everybody beat their chest. Look at that. We got a great thing. No more flooding. Well, within 20 years, the plants had sucked up all the minerals out of the soil. We got the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression. How that happened.
And there you are.
In 1936, they knew the solvents were depleted, but they didn't relate it back to no more wood ashes and flood control.
It just, where did all the minerals go?
Exactly.
And then we decided, well, World War II came and a very interesting thing happened. So we turned all of those munitions factories into fertilizer factories. And we decided, well, we don't need all those wood ashes or those minerals, we can grow crops without them.
That's correct. Well, the folly here is, and again, Professor Albrecht knew this, and this is part of his internal feeling against the Green Revolution, that plants, and he was a plant physiologist and a soil physiologist, and he knew that plants do not manufacture minerals. Now, plants manufacture carbon compounds, vitamins, amino acids, fatty acids, carbon, but plants do not manufacture minerals.
Right.
So if they're not in the soil, they're not in the soil, where do you get them? Well, plants only need 3 nutrients to drive growth, even seeds for the next generation, NPK, which was the artificial fertilizer for the Green Revolution. And it was cheap, it was predictable, you could handle it either in liquids or granules, and it drove. We fed the world. America fed the world. And it further depleted the soil because it just sucked every element out of the soil because of the greater growth.
And we can keep feeding it NPK and keep sucking all the minerals out, and pretty soon
We still had the plants, but we were in trouble. And he recognized that we were in trouble, but he didn't quite put his finger on the piece that it was the technology going to electricity that did it all.
Mm-hmm.
Electricity essentially killed us. Now, the story gets worse. It even gets worse than this. And I want you to think about it. The ocean is dying now, Michael. The ocean is pretty much dead. And it's not from pollution. Because when we dammed up the river, we have 900, we actually had them counted. There's over 900,000, some 900,000 and some change of hydroelectric dams all around the world now. We've cut off the food supply to the ocean by damming up all these rivers. All the silt builds up behind the dams. And the silt was what was feeding the ocean.
In the same way
it fed the fields from floods. And so we cut off the food supply to the ocean. So the algae, the small plants are dying. They're not growing. So little fish aren't
little
there anymore.
Little fish aren't there. The big fish and
aren't
the whole,
there.
Yeah. Food chain.
Yeah, the whole food chain. They're sending out fleets of boats to catch fish in the ocean. They come back with three fish. They can't even pay for the diesel. So guess where all of our fish are being grown now?
In farms.
On farms, in ponds, on the land.
With NPK.
With essentially NPK, and also with corn and
soy,
genetically GMO soy and corn now. And we're in real trouble. We're in real trouble because of the Green Revolution.
And Dr. William Albrecht recognized that way back then.
He was right in 1938.
And he became the heretic of agriculture, and that's where we're going to go when we come back. The heretic of agriculture, standing up to what seemed to be the greatest thing ever happened to mankind, the Green Revolution, by which we could grow much more with much less, but end up with much less, too. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Dr. Joel Wallach, and you. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain radio program. Today, we're taking a look back at the Green Revolution, the Great Green Revolution that allowed for the population of the world to explode like bacteria in a Petri dish. Holy smokes, we're now able to support so many people. And we do it with the magic of the Green Revolution, which included some higher yielding grain crops, some more powerful equipment, and of course, more potent chemicals. Now what we do, we feed our crops with NPK, but something is missing. And a man way back when, 1938, William Albrecht looked at the situation with respect to crops and said something is missing. In World War II, he looked at the dental records of 70,000 Navy servicemen and recognized that he could almost tell where people came from by their dental records. Doc Wallach?
Oh, absolutely, because teeth are minerals. And you need a constant supply of minerals to maintain your face and your jaw and your teeth. Otherwise, the minerals just leach away. It's like anything else. Our bones are not poured concrete. They come and they go based on what you eat and what you don't eat. And so he was able to recognize by the analyses of the minerals in teeth where people came from because it reflected the analyses of minerals in the soil, thus the minerals in the food that they ate. And there's certain parts of the country where people had really great teeth, and they had strong teeth as long as they lived and ate where they grew up. In other places in the country, their teeth were very, very bad, although they had plenty of food, but their teeth were bad, not because they didn't floss and didn't brush their teeth. They just didn't have the minerals to maintain their teeth. And so this is what we actually employed in, the veterinary industry, so that you don't need to have a lot of dental bills and dentures for dogs and cats and things, because a can of dog food or a bag of dry dog food has everything in it. It has all 90 essential nutrients for the animals. And if you think about it, you just feed that dog food to them or cat food, and they'll live out their maximum lifespans. And the only reason they go to the veterinarian every year is because they need a rabies shot by law.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get the diseases we get. Now, they can. If you're just feeding them meat and trying to make your own dog food with ground-up beef and chicken bones and things, they'll be at the veterinarian all the time with all these same diseases we get.
So the idea is to give them everything they need. Albrecht recognized the fact that animals and people, left to their own devices, will eat a balanced diet if it's available.
That is correct.
But if it's not available, what they'll do is that they'll continue eating more than they would have otherwise to try to find that those nutrients that they're missing.
Right. It's called cribbing in horses, where they chew on the fence and eat dirt. And in kids, in human kids, it's called pica. And the kids will eat dirt and things because they're missing minerals. And he wrote a wonderful book called On the Other Side of the Fence. And the cover picture is a cow leaning through the fence, and she's standing belly deep in grass on her side of the fence. On the other side of the fence, the grass is all eaten down to the ground because all the cows are leaning through the fence, eating the minerals on the other side, because there's a road that went by, and the limestone they used for the roadbed before they put the asphalt on top of it leached out into the surrounding soil, and there's more minerals in the grass growing right next to that roadbed, and so that's what the cows are after.
So essentially, we know what we need way down deep. Our bodies know.
Yeah, well, we're built that way. We're built that way, Michael, to crave things when we're missing things, to have us look for it. And it's kind of interesting. I spent 2 years in Africa working with Marlon Perkins from the old Mutual Omaha Wild Kingdom show. And I was working on the white rhino conservation project, caught 200 white rhino and send them back here. And if you see white rhino in a zoo or a wild animal park, it's probably one I caught or offsprings. People say, yeah, right, Wallach, but you can go on my website and see me actually catching them. On the African elephant conservation projects, we actually analyzed the water in the various pans, as they call them, which are ponds, natural ponds, where the animals drank. Now, a human being will go to the cleanest, crystal clear water to drink, where these animals were drinking the dirtiest, muddiest water. So we analyzed them, and sure enough, the ones that were crystal clear water had few, if any, minerals in it. It was almost like distilled water. The muddy water sources that they were drinking were rich in minerals. It came from the slopes of the mountains and the hills surrounding water source.
So
the animals knew it.
So animals know, people know. But when we're short of it, we try to find it with whatever we can, which is often not what we should be.
Well, that's why we have obesity, Michael, because people are looking for something that's not in our food anymore. So they overeat, not because of lack of exercise or eating too much. They overeat because they're missing minerals. And this is, of course, why we're so successful in the longevity program for our weight loss program, because being overweight and obese is a mineral deficiency. And, of course, we have a program we call the Healthy Weight Loss Pack. You take that, plenty of minerals in there, and within days, your cravings stop. You'll begin to lose a half a pound to 2 pounds a day just by taking in these minerals.
There you go. Going back to William Albright, Albrecht, right after the Second World War, Albrecht stood up to the Green Revolution and said, we must revitalize our soil, which includes remineralizing them. And yet the world looked at him and said, are you crazy? We're going the other way entirely. So there's kind of a great divergence there. Right, one way was represented by kind of like the Brown Revolution, and the other was the Green Revolution. And everybody went to the Green Revolution because that's where the money was.
Yeah, well, that's where the yield was. And, of course, they were trying to feed the world. And the people who were doing this really didn't have a love of and the understanding of the soil like Professor Albrecht did. And he knew there was a problem. And he never quite figured out how to solve it. Because his goal was to come up with big machines to grind up mountains and rocks and so forth and put the minerals back in the soil. And it's not economical or even today feasible to do that on a scale, on a big scale. But what you can do is supplement. Mm-hmm. And this is where I started when I was 9. And this was one of my interests to get into scientific farming.
Yeah, because you came in from a dairy farm or a beef farm.
And, of course, I had what today would be called Tourette syndrome. I had a facial tic, facial squinting and grimacing and oinking like a pig. And all my friends in school thought I was possessed. And it got worse and worse and worse. By the time I was 9 years old, I was really disabled with this Tourette syndrome. So my mom took me to an eye doctor, a medical doctor, eye doctor, a gal by the name of Mary Jane Skeffington, I'll never forget. And she examines me, and the first time I've ever been to a doctor, and she says, well, I can't find anything wrong with him, but he does have long eyelashes, and are hitting his glasses, curling back and tickling his eyeballs, and I think that's what's happening here. And I'm 9 years old, and I'm shaking my head saying, no, that can't be right. No, that's too stupid. And so the next day in school, when everybody else went to lunch, I went to the library and asked the librarian, are there any medical books here that'll teach you about health for humans? And she said, yeah, back in the corner. And I began to read those. And the next part of the story is really fabulous.
How you took care of your own Tourette's syndrome at the age of 9? Wow. Folks, this is going to be really good. Food Chain Radio program, talking with Dr. Joel Wallach about Professor William Albrecht and the impact the Green Revolution had on our food supply, and how some among us, Dr. William Albrecht and Dr. Joel Wallach being among them, said, well, wait a minute, something's not right here. We have to do something a little bit differently, or we're going to find ourselves in very deep doo-doo. And we are finding ourselves in very deep doo-doo. What is it? 85% of the bankruptcies are for medical reasons?
That is correct.
Wow. Right back. Too much fun. That's what we're having right here on the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Dr. Joel Wallach and you. We're talking about Professor William Albrecht and his impact on the Green Revolution, being the resident heretic, as it were, who said that we need more. We have to figure out how to revitalize our soil, and we're talking about the impact of that on our food today, and away we go. Now, with the story that we're working on is how Dr. Joel Wallach, as a young boy of 9 years old, how on earth did you figure out how to cure yourself of Tourette's at 9?
Well, I found a nurse's handbook, and it had a little section of nutrition. I went to the index, and I was looking up eyelashes and eyelids, and I couldn't find anything, so I went through the A's and the B's, and I got down into the C's, found cramps. I said, well, maybe it's a face cramp, because I heard athletes talking about cramps. And so I went to the page that said to look in. It says it's a calcium deficiency. Well, before the bus would pick me up in the morning and go to school, I had chores on the farm, right? One of them was to feed the little bull calves we were going to sell at auction, because we didn't need that many bulls on the farm. You only needed one or two bulls, and the rest
one
were cows.
Yeah.
And so I'd feed them alfalfa pellets out of these bags, and they were enriched with vitamins and minerals. And you'd look at the analyses tags, and it'd say these vitamins, these minerals, including calcium. So after school that day, I went home, and I began to eat those alfalfa pellets. And it tasted like sawdust, but it had calcium in it. The next day, I threw the cereal out into the chickens in the yard and filled that bowl with those alfalfa pellets, started to put milk in there. My mom freaked out. She tried to take them away from my dad, said, Lord, let him have it. Maybe something will work. By the third day, Michael, I was cured of Tourette's syndrome. By the third day. And I knew immediately that there was something in those alfalfa pellets, that calcium, something solved my problem. And doctors didn't know anything about it. That was very scary to me. And so that's when
Do they still know anything about
it? Nothing. They know nothing about nutrition. They don't get one single minute of nutrition. They have people who go to school and become nutritionists and dietitians, and they depend on them.
Well,
doctors know nothing.
That's exactly what happened to William Albrecht.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a soil scientist, he was studying human nutrition and animal nutrition, and he got into big trouble for that because he's stepping on toes of the big industrial agriculture people.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't do that, Dr. Albrecht. You can only be a soil scientist, and soil has nothing to do with human health.
And that's what they believed. That's right. The Green Revolution went that direction because they were looking for yield to feed the world, and he knew the soil was depleted. But he never quite put his finger on it, and I didn't learn it until about 20 years ago, writing the book Immortality. The top 20 longevity cultures, according to the National Geographic, are all third world cultures. They have no electricity. They all still use wood for fuel. They irrigate with glacial milk, the runoff from glaciers that have a lot of minerals in them. Glaciers grind up the rocks, which is what Albrecht wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the longest-lived people on Earth, the Hunzas, they have what's called glacial milk. The land flowing with milk and honey. It's almost biblical. And I'm trying to put my finger on it. Why are all these top 20 longevity cultures, according to the National Geographic, why are they third world cultures? Why aren't there any industrialized countries?
What about us?
Well, here we have electricity and natural gas and solar power and nuclear power. Every one of these long-lived cultures have wood stoves. And they're throwing the wood ashes in the garden. So I looked at an analysis of wood ashes. Uh-oh, guess what? They're 95%, 90% minerals. I said, well, there's Albrecht's answer. There it is right there. That's why they live so long, they're so healthy. They have 40 times 100 as we do. And it's because they're still using wood ashes. Every country that goes from a third world culture to a first world country and they convert to electricity, within 10 years, their beautiful health goes away.
Their jaws start sinking, their teeth start falling out.
They get obesity, diabetes, and they go bankrupt because of medical care.
Let's go to Wendy. Wendy, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Program with Dr. Joel Wallach and Michael Olson. Fire away, girl.
Hello?
I got you. Go ahead.
Oh, wonderful. I was wondering, and first off, it's an incredible honor, Dr. Wallach.
Well, thank you.
And I was wondering if Professor Albrecht saw the problem with adding non-digested organic matter and it going into eutrophism, like on a battlefield where you'd have bodies left in the bacteria became a digestive rather than a feeding, and all the plants would die.
Yeah, of course. Well, this is many, there's many side effects of artificial fertilizer, NPK, one of which is just like detergent. Gets in our drinking water, well water, rivers and the oceans and ponds, and you get algae blooms, and the oxygen level goes down, and fish die, and you have big fish die-offs and everything. Simply because of the nitrogen in the fertilizer. And so this is a problem, and you're going to expect these things to happen. There's no way to get around that if you're using NPK for fertilizer. It's going to happen. And they've learned this for ponds and things when they're rearing fish, you know, in ponds on the mainland. And so they have to watch that. They have to watch the amount of nitrogen they're giving. So they reduce the amount of nitrogen, and they're using GMO foods to kind of make up the difference, and so they have less nitrogen requirements, but you have other problems now.
What about the impact of all NPK on soil microbes?
Well, it comes down to bacteria and protozoan also require minerals. Okay, they don't just require nitrogen, right. They do require minerals. And so you limit the number and variety of bacteria because you're pulling out the basic needs.
And there you go. So I guess we're going to take our last break. But when we come back, I want to ask you to look at what Professor William Albrecht said so many years ago, 1938. He said, we're in big trouble. Are we in big trouble? That's what we're going to ask Dr. Joel Wallach. When we get back, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Dr. Joel Wallach, and you. We're looking at the Green Revolution, that great blooming of technology that allowed us to grow so much more food with so little effort that it enabled the population of the world to just explode like bacteria in a petri dish. But we're missing something. What is it? Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Professor William Albrecht, chair of the Department of Soils at the University of Missouri, way back then, before World War II, this is what he said. A declining soil fertility due to a lack of organic material, major elements, and trace minerals is responsible for poor crops and, in turn, for pathological conditions in animals fed deficient foods from such soils. And mankind is no exception. Well, been well over half a century, Doc Wallach.
Well, Professor Albrecht's predictions, unfortunately, have come true. Right now, in America, we know and all experts agree that our children will be the first generation that do not live as long as their parents. That alone is startling. And then even recently, in the New York Times and front page of the Wall Street Journal, they said the generation, 1940, they're 46 years old to 56 years old, kind of the early baby boomer stage, these people are the fastest dying segment of our society, the fastest growing demographic of our society. And it all has to do with general illnesses. They all have all these terrible illnesses, and doctors prescribe drugs to them, and they're dying not only from these illnesses, but they're also dying from side effects of the drugs. And, of course, the medical system has missed this very badly. They want you to believe that these diseases such as diabetes, so let's just take diabetes, for instance, because 30% of Americans are type 2 diabetic or pre-diabetic.
30%?
30%, yes, sir. And that's one of the reasons why we're going broke, because of the diabetes and obesity. And we've known for almost 80 years, Michael, that type 2 diabetes is a deficiency of a single mineral. is not genetic in any way, shape, or form. It's a deficiency of a single mineral. And it was discovered in the animal industry 80 years ago. And I began employing this in the longevity program 38 years ago, when we came up with what we call the healthy blood sugar pack. And you take that
well,
and you're...
What's the mineral?
Well, I can't tell you. It's a secret sauce. And I learned from painful experience, if you tell people what that mineral is, they'll run to GNC or the Walgreens or the grocery store. They'll buy that mineral. They'll take it and it won't work. Because you need all the other cofactors with it, to make it work. It's kind of like making an angel food cake recipe.
Isn't that what food does?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, food provides all those other, if food has everything in it, it provides all those other cofactors, and thus your body can assimilate it and make use of it then. But if you take it, you know, a rock and beat the rock up into little pieces and eat the rock,
you're not going to get much of it.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, and we're seeing this too in very famous people, rich people. Joe Biden buried his son, Bo, at age 47. Just think of Steve Jobs' mother and dad buried him at age 56. And Iwata from Nintendo, his parents buried him at age 55. And they're dying of simple things that are preventable. And so what we have to do is go back to Albrecht, and we have to get all these nutrients. But it's problematic. It's trying to reverse the direction of the gravity. We're not going to be able to do that easily. And so we have to supplement to make up this difference in a reasonable amount of time in our lifetimes. We're going to have to supplement to make up the difference. And this is what we've learned. And so I can't thank Professor Albrecht enough for putting me on the path to know that there was a problem. And I solved my problem using his kind of mentality and actually brought it to the world through his advice and mentoring. And we just love him to pieces.
A crusty old heretic, Professor William Albrecht, and how he changed the world for Dr. Joel Wallach and lots of people that you take care of as well. So there it is, folks. We've got to do something to get the food back into the food, or we're all going to be in big trouble. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you all very much.
I like that.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.